This episode is brought to you by HP Instant Ink. No one is reading your mind, but HP Instant Ink knows when your printer is running low and sends new cartridges before you run out. So you never have to think about ink. For details, visit hp.com/instantinkspotify. Conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by PayPal. These days, choices are everywhere. Like, for instance, the milk in your coffee. Would you like it from a cow? A nut? A tree? Everyone wants options. And now your customers have a new option in the way they pay. With PayPal in person. Just generate your unique QR code in the PayPal app for them to scan. And start accepting PayPal in person today. Learn more at paypal.com/US/getQR code.
Hey everybody, welcome to the panel. Thanks for coming. I'm Tom Mullen. I run Washed Up Emo. I don't know if you've heard of that site. It's a podcast, DJ night website, about the late 90s. It started in the mid 2000s when I was upset with everyone discussing hair dye instead of Christy Front Drive. And I've also advised Beats and Pandora on emo, and I work at a major label working with dead people.
He's not lying.
Bob Dylan's not dead.
Some are, most are dead. So this is my fun thing to do. And we have a great panelist today. Hopefully discuss the emo revival, talk about its history, talk about what it is now, and hopefully what it is in the future. We have some old people. We have some young people, and I want you guys involved too. So if you have a question, raise your hand and ask. It is like a hardcore show, so if you do heckle, you will not get the mic during a chorus.
Yep.
That is exactly what's going to happen. So no heckling. So first, I'll introduce Brian Packers. He's a good friend. He works at the Syndicate.
Hey.
Wow.
Hey,
Brian. Look at that. Wow. I didn't even get
slow
a clap.
Slow clap.
Wow, that was good.
Let's hear it for Tom.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Oh, yes. This is being recorded for a podcast, so every time, make it a little louder next time. So he works at the Syndicate. We do Emo Night in New York City together, and he was part of the New Brunswick, New Jersey basement scene, which was hugely influential. A lot of bands came from that. And he also dumped an entire pint of beer on my laptop, and he's still alive today. Let's have Kevin Duquette. He co-owns Top Shelf Records out of Boston.
Yay!
A full-time endeavor since 2011.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And Sean Morin is label manager and radio promotion for No Sleep Records out of Huntington Beach. West Coast in the house. And then, last but not least, Norman Brandon, writer, educator, played guitar in a band called Texas the Reason, and is, wow, look at that. Look at that intro. And he works at a brand new label called Collect Records, so yes. Out of Brooklyn. So my thought on this was to talk about the revival, and my first sort of question to probably Kevin and Sean is, when you first heard, or everybody, the word emo revival. I did a lot of extensive searching, and I found a mention in 2008, and then it really started in 2010. But when did you guys sort of hear the term, and were you confused? Were you excited, or did you have no idea?
The first time I heard it, I realized after hearing it, like 2 years later, because I went back, I did something similar. I reblogged a Tumblr post from like 2011, and I was like, oh, emo revival. I was like, wow, people were using this phrase way back then. And there was this band, My Heart to Joy, that we put out a couple records for, and they played their last show, and it was kind of talking about how they were sort of that was their last hurrah, and they were kind of passing the torch to a bunch of other younger bands that were doing something similar. and I didn't think anything of it at the time. And then I guess 2013 or something, I'd say like some like Pitchfork write-ups kind of set that ablaze. So, and then I started hearing it ad nauseum everywhere.
But I mean, you were doing the label from 2011 on. Did you hear mentions of it? Was there things where were the bands talking about it, or was it just they were doing their own thing?
Like, everyone was pretty excited. You could tell there was something afoot. A lot of bands vibing off each other, and in a pretty congested area, like Northeast, Philly scene was really big for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it just kind of spread. Bandcamp, just Last FM. There was Last FM groups where I was really, really involved with, and just kind of there was like an energy about it that was pretty unreal. No one goes on Last FM anymore, though.
Sean, how about you?
Yeah, kind of a similar thing where it just I had heard of it or seen the term around, and then it just like 2013 just sort of exploded, but it was. I don't know, I'm sure everyone here kind of had a similar thing where you were already listening to these bands and you didn't really feel like it like needed or had any kind of name. It was just this resurgence of stuff that you loved growing up, and you were happy to see like so many bands pulling from that and like starting to really bring it back.
I mean, it was interesting because the bands were doing it sort of organically, and it wasn't like yes, there was the internet and people were connecting quicker, but it felt like a community. To it. And Norm, I don't know if you saw any similarities to when you were coming up and there was bands, and it just seemed like these guys were, I don't know, you would call them and you'd play a show together, and then next weekend you would help another one out. It didn't seem...
I mean, but I think that that's true for, like, any strand of indie rock.
But we're
like,
talking about emo.
You know, I'm just saying...
Emo revival.
That's the question that I would have for, like, Sean or Kevin is like, did you even consider what you were doing emo?
Yeah.
To be part of this revival.
Yes, that this like the two part phrase, those words,
yeah.
Like together, I didn't even think anything of. But I was just like, yeah, this is like, you know, band XYZ from 90s or whatever, and these bands are just like doing the same thing, and but just in a different era and picking up where, you know, where they left off. Beyond that,
so,
it was like.
So who did, because I mean, when I hear like the. like a lot of the No Sleep and Top Shelf stuff, like I think of Midwestern stuff mostly,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Right? Like not
in Kinsella we trust.
So I mean, that I guess like at some point that sort of became what people now I think are calling emo, like that sort of like descendants of that. Is that?
I'd say that like that's probably what most people consider, but it's like it's pretty broad at this point. I feel like, or always has been.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just sort of amorphous. I don't really, I'm trying to figure it out still.
Well, it's hard because I think it kind of like, I mean, the term brought a lot of bands to the forefront, but I don't think a lot of those bands maybe necessarily are playing like emo in a, like that sense. I think it's...
They're playing like, rock music.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
like,
and it's easy to categorize.
It's easy. Well, with anything, like now it's like it has to be categorized and genred in order to process. But obviously the community that it came from, the community that was built in, was like a punk and hardcore community. It's the same kind of ethics, same kind of ideas, and that sort of community allowed it to foster and grow and become what it is. But yeah, I mean, so many of the bands, it's like, yeah, it's emo, but it's not like some like you know when you the term is thrown around so liberally now that it's like using the term indie rock to in a sense it's like
right. Well, that's and I think and that's sort of like what I'm feeling like because like okay, so in 1998. I played with the Foo Fighters for an hour, and I used the same skill set and toolkit that I used in Texas is the Reason.
Yeah.
It was the same. To me, it wasn't that different. But, you know, nobody sees
Humble
Foo Fighters as
here.
Like... No, what I'm saying, like, nobody sees Foo Fighters as, like, the vanguards of emo or something like that. But to me, it was sort of like, it wasn't that different, right? There's sort of like... I think the problem is that it's not a problem. Necessarily, but what I'm seeing is that I think it is more a community than a style of music, but it's also like a style of music that nobody really. I'd have never heard of another style of music that nobody cops to. Like, I don't. You know, nobody's like, I'm not fucking dubstep, man.
That's true. there is the sort of like dancing around the term, because as Tom was mentioning earlier, like that the whole idea of like when it kind of turned in a sense, and you know, you're saying people were talking about like makeup and you know that whole
swoopy
thing.
Hair.
Yeah, exactly. Good stuff. Yeah, the really good stuff. The stuff that we're all super proud of. No,
for about 4 years I counted the swoop haircuts in all press.
I think you still can.
I do.
I think that like that is what necessitated the term, like attaching revival to it, because it's sort of like, no, it's not that. Like the word emo had kind of taken on a stigma about it, and saying this is coming from the same place, but like something completely different. Emo revival, like sort of.
Yeah, I think.
Let's,
how did the newer bands find it? Like that's what I always ask. You know, if it was IC Foxing or whoever, I ask them, yeah. How did you find out about these bands? Have they discussed that with you guys of how they sort of gotten into records or what, you know, what sort of
internet and message boards and stuff.
I mean, it's quicker. It's not like going to a record shop or having to see a show and going to a distro. It's you had everything at their beck and whim.
I'm a little younger than you.
No, I'm saying, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, what did the bands tell you that, oh, I found out about this and then I saw this. Like, what was their lineage to finding it and skipping over that era?
The biggest thing I found is that, like, these bands are, like, meshing and vibing off each other more so than looking super far back to the past for inspiration and, you know, what they're writing and what they're producing in terms of just, like, musical output. Mm-hmm. It's more just, like, I don't know, this unconscious one-upping of each other a community way.
I think you touched upon it, though, like, when you were part of a Last.fm community. You have all these algorithms now that can tell you this sounds like this and this is like that. And then now, quick Wikipedia search, you've got the entire history right at your fingertips. I mean, you know, talking about like New Brunswick and stuff like that, it was just, we were hanging out and going and seeing shows in each other's basements. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like Benny from Gaslight Anthem, he's the drummer. Like, I saw Hot Rod Circuit and Ryan and Maria like in his basement, you know? And it was just discovery and lending that way, but now you have the vehicle of the internet to actually just, it's all right there. That's it. There's no real discovery in the sense that like, oh my God, I just randomly stumbled upon it. No, there's an algorithm to it now, you know? It's interesting.
But also like a band taking out another band on a tour or something like that, that's always
sure.
Like, tried and true and it's never gonna go away. Like I got into Algernon Cadwallader, mm-hmm. like just because, some like friend recommendations, but you know, Teenage Cool Kids I got into because I took them out on tour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Last.fm, like I went into, you know, like their profile or whatever, and I'm finding like, oh, like bands like Colossal or bands like, you know, just like similar, like kind of just that jangly, like noodly kind of Midwest emo style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why is everyone copying that? That's what I always want to know. Play some hooks.
Dude, the big riffs are coming back.
Yeah,
they definitely
no, we
are.
Were joking. We did a DJ thing together, and I wanted to play, like, straight-ahead stuff, and he was trying to find the, like, weirdest, most chaotic stuff. It was just fun going back and forth. Two different styles within the same.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to what you were saying, where it's, like, not about music per se, but, like, a broader community that's, like, participating within a niche.
Right. Yeah. And that's sort of, like, I mean, to me, that's something I really relate to because, I mean, hardcore, after a certain point, like, so I grew up, like, punk hardcore. That was, like, the traditional in the 80s or whatever was, like, you know, thrash. And then in the 90s, kind of everybody started listening to other styles of music, things changed, and then it became this sort of also amorphous thing where all of a sudden hardcore didn't just mean thrash. You know, Chamberlain was considered a hardcore band, you know.
Split-lip.
I mean, by a lot of people, Texas is the Reason played with Madball. Like, we, you know, that's who was around, and that's the scene that we came from. And it didn't matter. Like, Hoya from Madball was like, yo, I love you guys. You know, like, it was, you know, to us, it was like, okay, it's hardcore. Like, it didn't matter anymore. It was just about being, you know, do we share some sort of ethic or, like, ideal or aesthetic or something? Like,
yeah, and I feel like I haven't seen that in a while. I want to say the only recent one, and this is like, now we're talking like 6 or 7 years ago, there was that Mastodon, Converge, Cursive, and I think it was like Minus the Bear was on that bill. Like, that used to happen all the time. that used to happen, like, all the shows that you would play. Like, that was the line.
Snapcase and Dashboard.
Well, I was actually taught, I remember being in college, and I remember going to, I joined like a college radio station, we met like the older cool kids, and they were showing us around and stuff like that, and I remember going to their dorm room and seeing a flyer for a 10-yard fight, Converge and Saves the Day show.
Yeah.
And I remember even back then being like, I want to be at that show. Like, I want to see that. But again, that goes back to the sense of community, and just, I think, the idea it's like, you know, all those guys are friends. You sort of have your foundation, whatever your gateway is into music in whatever form it becomes, be it punk or hardcore or indie or whatever. And then as you grow older, you build on that. Your tastes change and stuff like that. So obviously, if you're a musician and you're in a band, like, as those influences kind of come into play, then stylistically, you know, the stuff you play is going to change, but you're still going to have your friends. You're still going to want to be a part of the community. You're still going to want to support each other. So that's why, I imagine that's why stuff like that would happen, just because everybody was like, yeah, man, your band's awesome. I don't care that, like, you know, we play crazy heavy stuff and you play, like, quiet, twinkly stuff. Like, we want to play shows together. And then it goes back to kind of what you were saying, where it's like, you know, you put bands that kids may not seek out on their own in front of other people, and then it's like, oh, I didn't even know this existed, you know?
I mean, has that changed you guys with, you know, the label and, like, what band you're signing, or are people, you know, aware? It's so aware. I mean, it's in every publication, sort of, that a lot of them have written about this, and now there's a lot more eyeballs on it, on you guys as a label. Yeah. Is it more pressure? Are there more things that you're thinking about? Or is it still, I like this band, let's do it?
I mean, the only thing, yeah, I mean, that's my, I'm driving that all the way. I like it, let's do it. It was just the only thing as it was growing and, like, our name was getting mentioned a lot, your name's getting mentioned a lot. It's like, I don't want to be, like, pigeonholed as that one thing, because it's not all we do. But as it gets more and more attention, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, they're that label that does that. And then, you know, no real care to anything else.
I mean, it's like, so the hardcore label.
That was my only concern.
Yeah, I mean, like, Vagrant, Equal Vision, all those things, like, they wanted to, no, we're not a hardcore label, we're not
right.
Just, not, like, same thing with you guys. You're trying to branch out, and again,
sure.
Everyone's trying not to be associated with the name.
Yeah.
Well, I think Kevin. I think Kevin touched on it best. It's like you branch out. I mean, because you choose to work with bands that you like, or bands that you believe in, bands that you want to make happen. But also, yeah, you don't want to get pigeonholed. You don't want to be like, oh, you know, you want to be constantly, I would imagine, constantly challenging yourself as a label to do something different and support bands that you care about. And so you show all different sides of music rather than just being like, oh yeah, this is where we started, so this is where we should stay, or we should stay in this because it's something that we're expected to do or something like that.
Sure.
Not to say that you shouldn't still support the community, but yeah, it's definitely more about choosing the bands that you care about and that you want to help out regardless of style or whatever. So when we put out that acapella hip hop record next year.
Yeah. That's what the community decides who the community is.
Exactly.
So I mean
I definitely saw like a lot of support for it. I also saw kind of like a general pushback from, you know, all the bands that have been doing this for 5, 6, 7, 8 years and like in this revival per se. And it's like a lot of them that kind of got this going long since broken up, you know, and now this is getting all this attention. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Well, where were you in 2008 or 2009? So,
the world wasn't ready.
I mean, sure, yeah.
I think too the timing of the all the coverage, you know, I'd wake up and someone would email me and be like, Stereogum wrote about it, like what? Or Pitchfork. Was it just great timing with people that are older are in powerful positions at certain publications and that they loved it back when they were 18? Or was it the community itself sort of you couldn't not write about it because of all the things that were happening? The shows were getting bigger, the bands were sounding better.
Yeah, I think it's like people who grew up liking Braid and Mineral and stuff were getting jobs at places like this. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll write about that. Like, simple as that.
Yeah.
And we like hired a publicist, I guess.
Sketchy. Do you feel the same way, Sean?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a part of it. And I think the other aspect, I think it's, you know, both sides too. Like, eventually, if a music community or a music scene makes enough noise, like, there's got to be some attention drawn to it. But yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, when you have people that were a part of that growing up and they move on and they go, like, yeah, like you said, like, you know, positions of power or whatever, that they're going to want to write about it and they're going to want to go back and help out the bands. But yeah, I think too, like, you know, it never really went away. It just kind of like found a new home in like basements and, you know, just kind of like reinvented itself and came back and made so much noise that people kind of had to pay attention and at least see what was going on.
I think bands weren't, you know, if the these reunions and things happened 3 or 4 years ago, would not have, it would have been different, I think. Norm, do you feel like, I mean, you had two reunions, 06 and 13. Did you feel any different the latest one? Were there younger kids? Were there people that had found out about you? Or
I think, no, I mean, I think the vibe was kind of the same. I mean, I've always said, like, the reason why people remember our band is because our record label didn't go under. because there were so many other bands that were playing when we did whose record labels went under, and I'm sorry you've never heard of them because they're awesome, you know. but I do think, like, you know, I even feel like even in 2013 it still felt like the people who were coming to our shows, I didn't totally get the vibe that they were the same people who were like really loving Top Shelf even. Like, or really loving Run for Cover or No Sleep or whatever. Like, it's hard for me to say for sure, but it was definitely like a mix of people, and there were definitely a lot of younger people, and I definitely met a lot of like 17-year-olds, and I was like, wow, that's awesome, because I mean, you know, the record that people really love came out in 1996. I don't think they were born, so that's amazing. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know what the dividends were really from what's happening here. I think what's happening here, it's interesting, because like even when Texas the Reason was a band, there was a Midwestern scene.
Sure.
We were really like friends with them, obviously. Like the Promise Ring was like our brother band, and like, you know, we were super great friends with Cat and Jazz, and like, you know, all the stuff that was happening over there, we saw each other as kindred spirits. Obviously, you know, touring together, doing splits and all that stuff. But at the same time, like, I remember on that last Promise Ring tour, feeling like there was even a divide in the audience. Like, that the audience liked both bands, but half the audience had their allegiance towards one and half the audience had their allegiance towards the other, just a little bit more, you know? And I think that there's still some residue of that, where I don't know if people who are like, you know, just, I don't know, who are really into Band A, or even Intuit Over It, who played with us on these shows, like, if people are really here into that band or into Ed, what Evan's doing, we're like dying or gagging for Texas of the Reason. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It didn't, I felt like there was a similar sort of divide, but that could be my imagination.
Do you think it'll get, do you think the word will ever, you know, have not a negative connotation, or people not wanting to be like, no, not me, no, we're indie rock. Do you think it'll ever get past it, or will always be,
Depends on who the publicist is, you know. Honestly,
you're such an industry.
Yeah. We all are, and that's the funny part about it. It's like it touches back on what we were just talking about earlier. Like, you know, people get into positions of power where, you know, power. I don't think we
zero.
Yeah, but now you can influence things. Like, these are the things that you like. Like, you want to propel the things that you like. I mean, whether a band identifies with the term or not, I don't think it's important. Is it good music? That's it.
I mean, that's how I always felt. The music sort of can travel, and it was a little lull, and then it kind of came back, and that aesthetic and that feeling and that scene, it felt real. I remember talking to you for the first time. It was, wait a minute, what are you doing? How are you finding these bands? I mean, I had no idea. I thought I was in the know, and you guys were signing this amazing, these bands were coming up from sort of nowhere. Which I thought was great.
But also, I don't think it's like out of nowhere. There's still scenes. Like, you were talking about the Philadelphia scene, and I was like, oh my God, there's a whole bunch of bands that sound just like it did 10, 15 years earlier.
For sure.
But they were all thriving off one another. They were all playing music that, sure, harkens back to whatever it was, but that scene was there. Like the Long Island scene, you know, in the late 90s, similar to that. I don't know.
So there'll be a revival of the revival soon, I guess.
Probably.
Yeah. I hope the mid 2000s doesn't happen.
Emo squared.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't somebody just had the Screamo revival that was coming up, right?
When's that coming?
That's next month.
Does anyone know when that's coming?
That was canceled.
I think. The thing I always laugh to is every day now there's a premiere for Emo Revival Band. It's like, I just, do you guys are, it just seems like every day there's another site or another thing doing a premiere. Are you guys?
Yeah.
Is it working? How are you seeing sort of change with this more exposure? There's every site's like, yes, I mean, they would not take a phone call about these bands prior, and now they're wanting to post about them.
That's like dead on. The other day we premiered a song for one of our bands through AV Club, which I think of as like a good fit for like the style of music. And there was, I'm like, okay, cool, we're going up at like 10 a.m. with this, cool, and getting everything all set. And then later that day, there's just like album premiere from song premiere, just everywhere. And I'm like, this is overload. No one's listening to all of these. And
then, kind of overload. Like,
yeah, I wonder what the how effective it even is at that point.
Well, we've actually also heard from like the guy who does our publicity that there's a lot of those sites that are scaling back on their premieres of new bands, which is going to kind of reinvent the wheel as far as like trying to find, you know, how do you like you said, the overload. Like eventually you hit capacity, and like, you know, when there's four song premieres and two album streams in one day, it's like you can't. It's become so much to try to digest and listen to.
I have time for like two things a day. So that's just, yeah. More than that is too much.
I mean, I think that there's sort of like an undue amount of, not pressure, but sort of like expectations from press anyway. Like, you get very limited returns on press depending on what it is. Like, so it's like, yeah, there's a million premieres a day or whatever. Like, generally speaking, unless people are really waiting for it, it doesn't really catch fire. You get the ears you get, and then you move on and try to build on that. But yeah, I mean, it's not the same. It's like even when, like, I don't know. I feel like nothing is a big deal anymore.
Like, yeah, I mean, there you used can to put be all caps, but it doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, there used to be things where it's like, holy shit, you got in Spin. Like now, it's just like, whatever, someone wrote about us, like, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's no. I'm trying to find out what the big deal is, and I'm not getting it. I don't know. What's a big deal to you?
I mean, I'm psyched anytime Pitchfork covers anything, just because they're like.
NPR too.
NPR does a lot for us. I mean, there's some things where it's just like, yeah, that did what I expected, and there's some things where it's like, whoa, that really moved the dial, and. We've never had Rolling Stone look at anything of ours, but I'm like, I would really? Imagine, like, yeah. But I would imagine, like, I don't know, a view.
As far as just
coverage in any capacity.
I mean, it was. I think when we did the Balance record and we started talking about premiere partners and stuff and ideal premiere partners and, you know, kind of going over that, and then yeah, like when we locked in Pitchfork for both a premiere and an album stream, we're all just kind of like, whoa. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like that was definitely, we all kind of took a step back and like, we were all kind of like, yeah, ideal world, that would be awesome. And that's what we want. And that's what we want for this band. But I think when it actually started happening and then like, you know, then obviously like Touche and, you know, like all those bands started getting picked up on those sites. I think it was definitely like you were saying earlier, like, oh, this, they wrote about this? Like it's very.
Positively?
Yeah. Yeah. They actually had good, they didn't give it a point. They didn't just do like the Jet review where it's just, I'm sure you guys have seen it, where it's just the monkey peeing into his mouth.
Yeah. It's
which is probably my favorite music review of all time. Yeah, they thoughtfully wrote about and cared about the bands that they were writing about. And I think that was really interesting to see.
But that's the thing. So Rolling Stone, like, I don't know if anybody from Rolling Stone's here. No, I mean, they've pretty much been like, you know, like at this point they're saying like they've fatigued with all the premieres and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much like if Neil Young's not doing a collab on the Balance album, you're not getting in Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Basically.
I mean, he is, so we're fine.
That's gonna be great. I think you guys wanted to mention, you know, how college radio helped with this, well, or how it sort of, you know.
I mean, you definitely. I don't know, Brian. Do you want to go first or?
No, you can.
No, I mean, I worked. I did college radio at a company called Planetary, and when I kind of found out that this was happening, I was like, wow, I really want to like bring these bands in and start like showing these programmers like all of these bands, because like this is the stuff that I loved growing up and it meant a lot to me, and hopefully like I can kind of be that gateway for some of these other kids. But when we started working, I mean, when we started working with No Sleep or we started working with Count Your Lucky Stars, it was really hard because there was no comparison point. There was no contemporary comparison point.
like you had younger programmers and you'd be like, yeah, it sounds like Captain Jazz or it sounds like American Football, and they'd be like, what? What's that? So it was certainly interesting to see as far as like once the sort of the term came back, I'll say emo. Once emo came back and you started seeing coverage in major publications like Spin and Pitchfork and Stereogum and all those places, like it became a relevant thing for younger programmers, and you saw the uptick at college radio and like on the charts and stuff like that. Like, I mean, when the Braid record went like top 10, that was awesome. That made me so happy. Like that was really cool to sit back and watch that and be like, cool, it's
that's newer kids.
Yeah, exactly. Especially for a band like that that did, yeah. I mean, did so much for me growing up, and like, but to see that kind of like support for them was just, and like see like NPR all over and stuff like that. But so yeah, I mean, at least from a college radio perspective, that's how I've seen the culture and the climate change, just like much more attentiveness towards it and taking it as like a real thing rather than being like, I don't know, this kind of sounds boring. I'm just going to pass on this.
Yeah.
I mean, we had people like USA Today and like Entertainment Weekly and stuff hitting us. I'm like, this is what? Why? What are you? Who works here? What's going on? And I just thought like very weird fits, but like it was like, oh, you have like an audience of millions of people that you're gonna. Okay, sure.
I should say that the editor of EntertainmentWeekly.com recently was telling me how much he loves The Hotelier.
He loves The Hotelier.
I'm not joking.
It's a great record.
He went to the show, Webster. He was like, fucking amazing band.
So that's all you gotta do. You gotta be in a band that's ahead of the time, that you know people that will be older and then get in pop positions of power, and then you'll be popular later. Got it. All right.
You just need a time machine in your
Yeah, I just need a time machine.
I'm really into calling it the term now.
I think we should just take. I just think we should take the power back. Like take the word back. Take away the negative connotation.
That's true.
No one's really done that. Nobody's actually. I mean, have they? Have there been a band that's been like, we're fucking emo and proud? Like that band's gonna be huge. Whoever that is.
I worry that that band would have the swoopy hair that we were talking about.
Yep. Yes, they would. Feel free to ask any questions. You know, if you guys have it. Oh, there we go. Hi. Name and where you're from. Okay, I'll write that down.
It's fun. Pull it up on SoundCloud.
I will play it for everybody right now.
This is the demo submission part.
Pictures of Zooey Deschanel. But I did have a question. Do you think that the emo revival correlates with the mass saturation of EDM?
Whoa.
Norm. Norm was...
he asked because I was a techno DJ.
He was a techno DJ.
Wow. Let's get real.
But do you think that the emo revival is a way of rebelling against the force of EDM that has come kind of like, you know?
I feel like that would be like a broader pushback in just like rock music in general, like guitar based music in general, more so than like just like our little niche here. But yeah, I think like there's. I feel like there's better guitar-based records coming out now than there have been in recent years, for sure.
I would say like if there was a pushback in anything, if emo revival, if I had to pin emo revival on anything, I would pin it on sort of disaffected, ironic indie rock, and that being the thing that sort of people were like, I'm kind of over just not feeling anything and just being like, whatever, man. Like, you know, maybe I kind of. Actually hurt when, you know, my partner broke up with me, or like, you know what I mean, or maybe like I want to cry for a little bit, you know, like maybe I am affected, you know? I think that's probably more of a sort of cycle of rock that you know, I was personally, because, you know, as much as I love sort of indie rock and, you know, I can be disaffected too, you know, I feel I'm human. I would say that that's probably more of that. I mean, as far as the EDM thing goes, I just think it's like, EDM kind of came up as sort of like the moment of just perfect confluence between sort of youth culture, corporate sponsorships, and technology. You know, yep. Like it just sort of, it was perfect for the making. But my secret hope is always that those people will kind of go backwards again and start buying, like, you know, not late 90s, early 1000s house and techno records. They're really good, and you should all check them out.
Yeah. Question, yes, hello. Where are you? Hi, what's your name? Where are you from?
I'm Jessenia. I'm from WML. I'm the music director.
Awesome.
I have two questions. One of them is a little bit more possibly taboo than the other.
Oh, boy.
One being, with people being afraid for the emo term, do you think some people flock to calling themselves math rock to avoid saying emo?
That's not. Yes.
Yeah. That's what happens.
Next question.
Going.
Next question. Yep, we're good.
Our school, our music.
That's awesome.
Their internet personality is, they put up pre-orders for a fork with their band name on it. Like, take literally nothing seriously from them. They sold 400 forks in like a couple hours. For $4.20. No, they made 420 of them available for $4. I can't even remember what it was. Really dumb.
It was 420 related, basically.
Yeah.
Drugs are bad.
I think they just wanted to make a record that people hated because.
So you didn't like force them to make a record?
No, I didn't even put it out. They self-released it.
I think the biggest thing that a lot of people over there thought was like someone had to make them make it, and then they were mad.
Like
everyone was trying to figure it out.
Oh, you're the evil
overthinking
major
it, like, way too much. They don't care. They just do their thing. And
yeah, Kevin will be done in a second. His car's coming around.
Okay, thank you. The other part of that, math rock. I love math rock so much. But I feel like, yeah, people like have...
Hold on. Does everyone know the term math rock? Raise your hand if you know the term math rock. Oh, that's good. That's a good number. All right.
Okay. I mean, I feel like, yeah, there's... Most bands probably just would go to, like, indie in general for that. But, I mean, there's definitely some bands that, like... I remember when, like, Terra Melos was getting pretty big. And, you know, there's, like, a whole, like, West Coast kind of, like, math rocky vibe. Where, like, yeah, we don't really care. So you'd find bands, like, just throwing, like, the 7-4 part in there. Like, yeah, we're, like, a math rock band. And it's like, dude, no. So
I kind of think that term is worse than emo. Like, I don't want to be math rock. That's weird.
I don't know. It's cooler.
Where do you think they separate? Because they'll be like, you have your obvious ones, like, Terra Melos is math rock. A lot of people would say, like, that TTMG is. And then people will say that, like, American Football is because of the opening and Never Meant. Like, where does that separate? It's math rock.
Do you guys draw diagrams that we could see?
Yeah,
have you seen the Venn diagram?
Oh,
the Venn diagram.
You didn't, I don't think that PDF
I'll send that around
to everybody.
I think you're only math rock if, like, you go to the show and you're not sure where to bop your head. Otherwise, you're bullshit. You're indie rock or you're emo. Get over it.
That's really funny. Any other questions? Oh, shit ton. In the back. Name and where you're from.
TJ, I'm from NYU, actually.
Fuck yeah, welcome.
Obviously, there are bands like World's Beautiful Place, You Blew It, and the other bands that kind of get to find like the twin
And then also add on, I'd like to find out when you first heard about the term twinkle core.
Yeah.
Because I was mad for a,
yeah,
I was,
that's oh,
I was mad for a good week trying to figure out where that came from.
Is that like tweet?
It's in Kinsella we trust again. It's
yeah.
Like super into Midwest, right?
The biggest problems with emo is just the terms that we cannot seem to come up with a good one. Everything is
there is a person that I'm trying to get on the podcast, and he will not do it until I change the name of my site. So there's how the negative connotation.
No sense of humor.
Zero. He's very serious. So I guess what's next and when you first heard Twinkle Core? For everybody.
So I'm like actually, we touched on you at some point way earlier in this discussion. We were talking about like, were you wary of like this getting big? And I definitely like I have concerns because I'm kind of like, I see this going in the same way it did from like 90s to 2000s to like early 2000s, and this catches on. Major labels start trying to pump some money into it, and then you just get a heap of garbage again, and then we're kind of go through
recycled
a little,
again.
And then we have like emo revival in like 10 years or so. So it's like it's cyclical. I feel like I'm worried about it getting into a place that maybe like this community where it's coming from and where it would, I don't even know if anyone knows where it wants to go or whatever. But I feel like it would go to a place that like isn't as authentic, and that's like definitely a worry of mine. But yeah, actually, that's probably the only one. Otherwise, I'm just kind of like, yeah, do your thing, cool. It's like a self-governing kind of thing.
What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I'm kind of in this. I'm kind of in the same boat as Kevin. Like, you worry about that sort of cyclical thing coming back, and again, like, yeah, the outside interest piques major label interest. They come in and try to really sort of like gut the scene in a way and pick up what they want, and kind of like, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out for them. But then you have like a sort of like ruined scene of people that have worked very, very hard to get where they are. And as far as like Twinkle Core, that's brand new to me. I actually
so brand new, brand yeah. new. I've heard about it. I was here a long time ago, Brian.
Well,
Twinkle Core.
I don't. I think you and I joked about it on IM or something
yeah,
like
probably.
That. So
does anyone use IM? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Dude, I use yeah. IM every single day of my life.
I mean, I think the authenticity factor. I mean, that's always going to be there. Like, is there a future? Who knows? Who cares? Like. Good bands release good music, and that's it's going to be what it is. And then you're going to have somebody that is a music director at a radio station, or you know, writer X, and they're going to coin it as emo cubed at that point or whatever it is. And it's going to be categorized as long as it's good music. It's gonna be that.
So
I don't know.
I do want to say one thing is that. We shouldn't pin too much on outside forces because I think we also have to understand that a lot of the bands that sort of make the music of a moment usually are like early to mid-20s. They're sort of like coming into their own as musicians. They're just sort of like maybe even, you know, they're either playing power chords or moving beyond power chords for the first time. They're listening to new records. They're taking in new stuff. And so what happens to most sort of like youth subculture music scenes isn't even necessarily that the major labels come in, although that always happens. It's that the people in the bands also get older and start listening like Fleetwood Mac and like, you know, whatever it is that they've decided is cool or
they're
mature.
Better.
But like, not always.
I'm thinking positive.
I mean, you know, they make the mature record, which, you know, sounds different depending on who the band is, and sometimes sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But people always tend to go, oh man, that's because they signed to that label. And it's like, it's not actually. It's because they started listening to other styles of music and wanted to play something that sounded like what they were listening to at that time. So, you know, I think like the scene would get sort of boring if all they, like, You Blew It listened to was Into It Over It and World is a Beautiful Place. Like, they're obviously listening to records outside of their scene. And they're going to evolve into something else that you may or may not like.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to predict, like, now what, you know, what it's going to sound like. Because, yeah, like you said, like, bands are going to want to push themselves and do different things and try different things stylistically. They're going to have influences come in from different places. So that's going to change how those records are going to sound. And I guess you're right, yeah, the audience is really going to determine whether the success or failure of those types, once we get to that point,
yeah.
Whenever that happens.
And then you write the record that you tell everyone that you hate.
I think that's the direction they should go in, just writing stuff that they don't.
More questions? Hello, right there.
Hi, my name is Lauren Corey, and I'm a DJ for 90.3 WAIH at SUNY Boston.
Nice.
And the way I see it, a lot of these bands and a lot of the culture came together through the internet, through social media. Like someone mentioned Tumblr, I think that's a huge part of it. What do you guys think is the real spark or something that really brought the culture together, really started this emo revival?
Kevin, Sean, Brian, Lauren.
Was there a spark? No, I mean, I think, you know, the original topic of this panel was going to be like, is there an emo revival? And obviously that's snowballed into whatever this is now. But you know, it was always there. I think is the point that we were talking about in the beginning before we started talking with each other about this stuff. I mean, it was always there. I don't think that there was necessarily a spark. You know, the bands were existing. They're like Algernon. You know,
I was just about to bring them up, actually. I was going to say, there's like, for every movement or whatever, there's always sort of like a torchbearer or two. And I point to, like, for at least when I got, like, really, really involved with this, and, like, bands like Snowing, Street Smart Cyclists, like, the same thing, basically, but, and, like, Algernon Cowalder, is like, wow, those bands are really exciting to me. The first time I heard that, I was like, whoa, this is, like, bands are doing this right now?
Yep.
And, you know, and I'm from Boston, so I just... there wasn't as much going there, but they played there, and so it was when the first time I like, saw any of those bands live, I was kind of blown away. And it occurred to me, like, those are kind of the bands getting all the attention in this right now, but, you know, there's a whole, like, New Brunswick, like, basement scene, and there's tons of good bands just playing all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in that vein, and sort of, so there's these bigger bands that get the attention for what they're doing, I feel like, but then there's, like, this whole other... under that umbrella, there's, you know, a ton of other bands doing the same thing. So I feel like there's a... I'd point to bands like that as, like, what maybe helped get this going. I think that answers the question, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yeah.
Cool. Any more questions on the left here?
I'm Ryan from WSJU. And I don't know if you saw the article from BuzzFeed, but how they did 23 was unforgettable.
Sorry.
And
holy shit.
He wrote a letter to the writer.
I wrote a letter.
Do you have the letter?
I reach out personally to these people and ask them to come to an actual night where there's music playing. Third...
Do you just have a manifesto that you send?
No, it's just... I was... A lot of those come out where it's, you know, they mention all the bands, they mention the soup, fine. Everyone knows I get really angry about it. But I wasn't going to do it. But then I started reading, and it listed Linkin Park. It listed Papa Roach. And that's when I said, all right, this is, don't name it that. Put it something else. So I just explained to her. I was like, try to do a little research. Talk to a copy editor. Talk to your boss before you, you know, I don't know if it was a community post on BuzzFeed. So, yes, I posted about it. I talked about it. I was very surprised. And unfortunately, it's BuzzFeed.
Outraged.
So.
That's like BuzzFeed's like third emo post.
And I thought Dan Ozzie like wrote, I thought he took it down. Like he wrote this whole thing about how, you know, BuzzFeed's pop punk thing and wrote this whole thing and hopefully that solved it, but it didn't. So I think those will still come. I think there are people that find out about it and they have different views. Everyone comes from a different place. I came from, you know, more of the basement scene. Certain people come from the mall. It's
but
fine
I also think
either
that
way.
Until people start to cop to it. Until people start to say yes,
you really
you're
want
emo
that
band.
Yeah, you really want that
then
band.
How can you claim that Papa Roach is an emo?
Norm,
he seemed pretty upset in some of those songs. All right,
you're on some philosophy shit.
Norm's smarter than us.
It's funny that you say that because I was totally about to drop some Marxist shit.
So I hope that I'm glad that she felt good about doing it, but I hope that people forget about it tomorrow. Or today, please. Yes, follow up.
Do you think that those type of articles where it's on like major publications stuff like that people read all the time, do you think like those type of things, like those lists are what fuels like the negative connotation you were saying, like, I don't want to be emo because like...
Yes, because it's associated with things like cutting, which I don't understand how that had anything to do with listening to music that's depressing. I just like depressing music. It has nothing to do with killing yourself or anything like that. So those things, that's what's like, you know, people put...
you know, gifts or like all I want to do is, you know, it's like that's not what this is. This is about music. It's not about, so that's that negative part that I get really frustrated about. Yes, in the back. Or not, middle, rather.
I'm Bobby from WUR in Dayton, Ohio. I feel like a lot of these bands sound just more like Archers of Loke as they do like Mineral or something. So why, who decided to pick like Mineral instead of like all these awesome 90s indie bands that I think seems more influential on the scene than like, say like American Football or like Raiders?
I'm going to let everybody answer what I was going to say. I totally agree with you. I think the interesting thing, I had Eric from Christy Front Drive. I met him 10 years ago, and I asked him, what did you listen to when you made the record? And I was expecting him to say all these bands, like-minded band. He's like, Buffalo Tom.
Yep.
And so I went out and bought every Buffalo Tom record at Generation Records down the street. So, yes, and the main, I've interviewed a bunch of bands, the main band they all say is Fugazi. You know, mm-hmm. If you want to take a point, that's them. So everyone can speak to that, too, but that's a, I agree that it's not just about those bands, and everyone's into different music. We all, I maybe only listen to this stuff, but but I think there's other, you know, indie rock and stuff that those all play together in the same bucket. What do you guys think?
Well, touched on the whole, like, not wanting to be pigeonholed thing earlier as a label, and I think the label that you put out a record with has a lot to do with how it's perceived. That they're known for doing something and doing it well, and, like, that's what they do, like in terms of like a genre or a niche that they cater to. If they step outside the box maybe and put out something maybe a little different, but like tangentially kind of, you know, like you said, Archers of the Loaf isn't like too far off the DNA from like Mineral or whatever, but you know, just different labels doing those, and one of them might be known as like an emo label versus just like someone who, like a Merge Records or something that just like, they don't touch that. They're known as like just like a classic like indie rock label, so the connotation isn't there.
I can totally vouch that. It's totally awesome because the fact that you're talking about Archers, it's a great thing to say when you're talking about labels because Knapsack, they're on the same label as Archers of Loaf, and in the 90s, they weren't like, you know, we sort of ran different. I just met Blair from Knapsack like last year. We were just like, how have we not met each other all these years? Because people in the 90s didn't perceive Knapsack the way they perceived Texas the Reason, the way they perceived Mineral or Braid or bands that were on labels that were emo or hardcore or post-hardcore or whatever. Because they were on Alias, they got an indie rock pass. But they were like doing the same stuff and were into the same stuff, and they just happened to be on a different label. So the label did kind of somehow define their existence in the 90s.
Cool. Any other questions on the left?
My name is Emily, and I'm with the Show Goes On Productions. And I'm just wondering, if, speaking, I've worked with a lot of artists who don't like any labels at all. Any labels, like even indie rock.
Even math rock?
Twinklecore. Twinklecore.
It's my new favorite word.
John or Kevin, to the label side?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest thing to do is have to do that, like put a tag on a band or a label, because like you're saying, from a marketing perspective, you kind of have to do that to explain to it to the outside world, especially if you're talking about, you know, having premieres on websites that maybe are going to reach people, like a new audience, and they don't know what to expect. But I guess probably the best way to do it is to kind of remove the genre tag altogether and just speak to the music itself, what the guitars sound like, what the drums sound like, and try to do your best to explain it that way, because then you're avoiding any of like the genre stigmas that you might come across. But yeah, I get what you're, the perspective that you have, like where you have to sell these bands and present these bands and get people out to these shows. It's much harder for you if you're like with a band that doesn't want to kind of pigeonhole themselves or put themselves in a genre or a hole or stuff, something like that.
And or a band that's actually crossover too.
Yeah.
Is it effective to market, and actually this is also for the labels, but like, can
it's bound to happen.
I think you can call two like similar artists that are in the same vein that are more household names. Yeah, well.
Bands are pain in the ass.
You gotta describe it somehow.
Yeah.
There are four of them making music. Okay, that like you need something more than that. You need to be able to describe the sound and genres as like cookie cutter as they can be and lazy, way lazy. The stuff getting labeled emo currently is like a lot of it is like maybe needs a filter that's a little bit more. But anyway, that's like I'm tired. We'll do another panel sometime about that. I see that as like totally useful, but you have to acknowledge that you're like actively marginalizing who you can talk to at that point. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like if that's the conversation that you want to have but with those people. I mean, emo's a kind of thing where I feel like for me personally, and I think a lot of people maybe even in this room, you might see that and actually click that or like take a longer look at that because you know like, oh, okay, well, you're saying this is this and I like this. And whereas that might be a turn off to like the other 9 people out of the 10, it's like at least you're getting your message across to like who you want to. And I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, it's about speaking to mass. You know, we're right now we are in a really small niche. Like we are music lovers, everybody in this room, you're involved with music somehow, but it's when you have to speak to everybody else. And that's where it can be useful or can work to your detriment, just like he's saying. You know, the 9 out of 10 people are like, ugh, swoopy hair, twinkle core,
but
you know?
I also think that, like, in marketing, and not just in sort of terms of record marketing, but in marketing in general, we use code words all the time to invoke certain things without saying it. You know, if we want to say that, you know, if we don't want to say, oh, they're a math rock band, we say, they're angular. You know, like,
yeah.
So it's
yes.
Like, you know...
That's funny.
There are ways to kind of get around it a little bit, but yeah.
Any other questions? It's in front.
Hello, I'm Brian. I write for the Aquarian Weekly based out of New Jersey.
Cool. Nice.
And I guess pretty much from like a writing standpoint, I'm pretty sure like a lot of you guys who work with different bands and work on certain labels, you see a lot of different like reviews and all these like articles about your bands and stuff that you kind of wrote, and pretty sure you hear the most ridiculous, most outlandish stuff.
Martha Stewart also had an article which you may do not search or read if you want to have a good day.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I'll explain. My question is, like, is there a way for like, people with like press to kind of like work together with labels so that way, or like the bands and the labels and the press people can kind of use negative connotations to their advantage in a way where, okay, well, this is a crappy article about these awesome bands. Why not try to like actually reach out to copy editors or do your homework per se so that way you can avoid that kind of stigma within the genre?
Apparently we have Tom Mullen policing emo.
I have had a Google alert for the last like 10 years.
I was just about to ask. You have to have Google alerts.
Yeah, I have Google alerts in the morning.
Because I get the IM at work. You see this article, and it's like, and it was published like 2 minutes earlier, you know? You're like, what?
Well, the thing is like, I had it for a long time, and for a certain period, it was crazy. And then in 2010, I started to get articles where people were mentioning it again, where they were mentioning these bands, mentioning Braid, mentioning Mineral, and I was like surprised because I thought everyone forgot about it, and I was only talking to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what was really exciting, is that 2010, you know, this band from Russia reached out to me and said, hey, man, we're really into Mineral. I'm like, how the hell did you find out about Mineral? And that was Last FM. They found out about it through Last FM. And then it, you know, I started hearing more about that stuff. So I think yes, I am trying to help explain, that's my life's mission, to explain the meaning behind it and the importance and how it is, it's a great music and it's continuing based on a lot of labels are still having success. You know, quit your job and have a label. That's amazing. And these bands are part of that scene and that community. So I hope that overcomes everything that's being said that's for clicks. You know, it's for advertising. That's what a lot of those articles are. They just want clicks. I don't know, you know, sorry. It's not my panel. The moderator shouldn't have talked.
No, I think that's spot on. Yeah. I was actually, when I saw the Papa Roach listicle thing, I was like, sure, they just included some like really offensively incorrect things here because they know that's going to get like tens and hundreds of thousands more clicks on it because of that. See this, man? Yeah. What?
Getting a lot of just like straight anger clicks. Like that's just, yeah, it's just trolling.
Tom Mullen clicks.
Like every time you went back to that, they were like, yeah, we got him. We got him.
Yeah, this Manhattan-based IP address. This page.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I started like going to middle school, I just remember hearing people throw around the word emo through like My Chemical Romance and like, oh, you like this band, you're emo. Like, no.
But it's gone through a lot, and it's and I think there's great things about all those time periods. There's been great bands through it all. I just really hope that it goes back to the music every time, where it's versus what you wore, what you presented yourself, or how many bus tours you were on. It was the music hopefully comes through. Any other questions in the back?
Yeah,
or
I was
middle?
Wondering, I was wondering how important do you think Hall Radio has been for a lot of bands in the scene? And if so, like where regionally has been the most effective?
Sean is the radio guy.
Yeah. I don't know. We kind of touched on it earlier. When people always ask me what like the when I was doing radio more full time, and people would always ask me what like the value of it was just kind of an extension of the community. And as far as like helping these bands, you know, maybe like, hey, you're going to be doing a lot of interviews in your career if you're going to be in a band for a long haul. Like going to a college radio station and like doing those interviews, it's good practice. And you're, you know, if someone's like, I remember, this is so silly, but I remember I really wanted to interview someone in cursive, and I reached out to Saddle Creek on a whim. And I was like, I'm never going to get an email. I'm never going to hear back. Never going to hear back. And, like, they actually got back to me. I did the interview, and I was, like, floored that, like, that they cared enough to, like, we were in, like, a know-nothing station in Rhode Island. I don't think our radius was more than, like, 6 miles. But he took the time to, like, call in, and I think that just speaks a lot to it. But, I mean, as far as college radio in general, I think, you know, I think it's an important part of it, just as part of like the indie culture. It's good that it's being better represented now than it ever has been in the past, I would imagine. I mean, I don't know, when in the sort of first iteration or whatever, I can't speak to that, but at least now it seems to be something that programmers are becoming much more open to. Before, they would just be like, oh, it sounds like My Chemical Romance, or like, what they would always compare it to like the swoopy hair stuff that we always make jokes about, but now they're seeing it as legitimate music that they can listen to and program and, you know, have these bands come in and play shows, and just, you know, it just kind of helps expand the community that much more.
I gotta say, though, that you know, you have people like Ian at Pitchfork and Dan Ozzie, you know, doing stuff for Noisy. That helps legitimize it for the music directors.
Yeah,
you might
exactly.
just not know, you know? You just don't know because you're younger and you didn't grow up doing it, but, and I think that's fine. I think it's good. I like those guys, you know? I mean, Ian can be a little scathing, but that's a shtick, you know? I think college radio, like, I started as a DJ at a station at Rutgers, and I actually found online, because I guess CMJ, like, posted some of their old issues, like, and you can actually search, like, the playlist that we had, and I found a playlist of mine from 1999, and number one...
Grandpa.
Yeah, I'm old. Number one was Braid on like my top 30 for the station for that week. It just happened to be that because it was like right around the movie music like compilations. So you know that's what we were playing at the station, and it was awesome to see that because he just put out a Braid record this year. You know, it's like a new Braid record, and that is what I can't do math. I'm terrible.
A while.
Yeah, it was old. But yeah, I think college radio is hugely important. I mean, it's where I got my start, and that's why I'm
sitting here too.
Yeah,
that was my excuse to meet bands. I would just ask the label, can I just go up to them and get an ID?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That was my way to meet them, say hi, get to know them, that was how you know that was smart of them to do, because you're gonna have a fan for life if you take those 5 seconds for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
More questions while we have time? Yes, down the side on the right.
Playing
Well, yeah, they're opening those tours.
Yeah.
I Intuit over it, just, he's like the poster boy for like opening for all these reunion tours right now. Boxing and World's a Beautiful Place is played with like Brand New. I guess that's, I don't know, that's not a reunion tour, but yeah, yeah, he played with you. He opened
But we put out two new songs, so what's up?
You did. I think also a lot of them are sort of going like, it seems like the timing is right for this. Like, let's try this tour. They realized, wow, this far exceeded our expectations. And I think you'll see like a lot of them, with the exception of like maybe the Jealous Sound, I think they were like, this is done. But like a lot of them are going to put out like new music or have put out new music and like have seen that this will do well if we do it. Kind of rejuvenates them, and now they're like, wow, people care. We can actually live off this finally, instead of just like playing basement show after basement show for 20 people and no one gives a fuck. So it's kind of taken. There's a nostalgia aspect about it, like no question. I think that nostalgia is more important to this genre than like most others.
Even lyrically, like it's kind of nostalgic. Mm-hmm. To begin with, it, you know, we're just like pining over the days past. Yeah. it's true. But I mean, I think that like there's a, you know, as a band that sort of, you know, went back last year and we played 21 shows, and it was, I think for us, it was sort of like just an interesting way to sort of play with the new scale of things, because when we broke up, I mean, you know, we were considered like a bigger band in the scene, but what did that mean? Like 500 kids tops, you know what I mean? So it was like, you know, we're playing, you know, 1,500 people or whatever, and we're just like, wow, like there's a whole new world out there. It was just kind of like fun for us, but we had no sort of like, you know, we didn't want to like be a band. We didn't want to like make this a thing again. Like it was really just a thing of like, we just want to like play these songs because we still love them. We still look like a band when we stand next to each other. Let's be real. Be real. There are some bands that don't
nope.
look like bands anymore.
Nope.
But you know, we all still played music, and like it just, and it was also a way, I think, to connect with sort of like these newer people. Like the way we found Intuit Over It actually was because somebody was like, "Have you seen this guy? He did a set of acoustic Texas covers in England. It's on YouTube. Check it out." I was like, really? Wow, holy shit. And like, I just emailed him. I was like, what's up? So it was like, it was a great way to connect with him and Title Fight and like all these other new bands that we sort of like felt like really somehow still kindred with. So.
Cool. More questions? On the right? Back there.
Hey, I'm Jesse. Property of Zach, Alternative Press, some other sites. I kind of want to follow up on that. I went and saw Mineral at Riot Fest in Chicago a couple weeks ago. And they were phenomenal. Let me put that out there first.
The whole show's online if you want to check it out, too.
But the show they did at the actual Riot Fest, not the after show one, there were maybe 1,000 people tops at a stage that could easily fit 5,000 plus. It was a little disheartening to see. And I'm just wondering, so many of the more established acts have gone through this whole nostalgia tour, you know, play the full album, revival thing. Is it sustainable for the older acts, or is it kind of a one and done at this point? Are people wearing out on the nostalgia factor?
I don't think you can keep doing it unless you come out with new material.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to have some traction, too. Because you can come back and sort of, it's like tone deaf to what's going on right now. Or like you're not sounding like what people want you to sound like, and then you're in a worse off spot, and it's sort of like, oh, we should have just stopped. But yeah, I don't think you can. What are you? Like, for example, I work with Braid pretty closely, and they did, you know, like a comeback tour, headliner, it's great. And then when they did those same markets on a follow up run, like a half a year later, they saw that the same rooms weren't sold out or whatever. So it's just kind of like, you know, you're going to see a diminishing return on what you're doing. If you're playing the same exact thing, it's kind of like, okay, that was a cool time and place, but
I think it's managing expectations too. Knowing your market, knowing when to play. Like, you know, Refused did a world tour.
That was insane.
It was insane. I'm sure they made a lot of money. And that was it. It wasn't like they're coming around next week again.
Well, that's on Property Zag and Alternative Press.
Yeah. 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 Good job, Randy.
Aquarian Weekly. Where else? Who else? Publications. There we go. See? It's up everywhere. More questions? Yes.
Hi. I'm just going to stand because I can't see you all.
Hi.
My name is Gloria Stiskin. I'm from Salem, Mass. I'm the music director at my school station. Just back on the radio thing because, like, it's CMJ.
Yes, it is.
Do you guys think that there will continue to be, like, a college radio presence? Like, I feel like when I approach a band and I'm like, oh, I'm a music director, they're like, okay, but do you have a blog? Like, can you write about our band? Can we, like, post it to Pitchfork or something? Like,
that band's an asshole, by the way.
Yeah, whoever those are. Yeah, what fans are these?
I feel like the cool factor and, like, the wow factor of, like, being on college radio is kind of wearing off, and I feel like bands are kind of more concerned about the exposure to get through the internet, just because, like, I mean, the current state of radio is kind of slowly withering away, but do you think that it'll continue having a presence within
the I think you have to do more than just say you met them and you're going to talk about them in the car with a bunch of friends. You're going to put up I used to put up a top 10 at the local record store of my metal records. I did a metal show as well. And I'd put the top 10 up every week and put, you know, my radio station, the request line. And that was the way I was trying to do more than just play it for 500 watts radius around the middle of nowhere. So I think it's letting them know you're going to do X, Y, and Z, or, hey, if, you know, I'm going to go to this show, or can I fly, or whatever kids do now. You know, if those type of things, I think, will help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I think that regardless of this scene or
flyering.
I think everyone knows what that is.
I know, but it just feels weird, like paper.
No, I think regardless of this scene or anything else, I think that the big thing about college radio is community. And the station, it's on the station to create their own value.
Yep.
It's not just, okay, I'm gonna get on air for an hour, I'm gonna play whatever songs I want, and then I'm gonna move on. Like, it's about getting together as a station and seeing, like, what else you guys can do. Like, and using that as your springboard to build and make a name for, like, stations would always be like, well, the administration doesn't see us as anything. It's like, okay, well, then that's on you guys to change that. Like, how can you, instead of sort of being like, you know, the weirdos in the basement that just play weird records, like, take a stand and be like, well, how can we be of value to our school? How can the school, the artists, like, just figure out new ways to do that? Like, for instance, we had on Saturday mornings when no one at the college was awake, we used to have people on air that would talk about, like, community issues and stuff, and would sit down and talk about stuff in the community that was, like, whatever was going on in Bristol, Rhode Island that bothered them. Like, they would have a platform for that, and that made us a valuable part of the community. And I think, yeah, just figuring out, like what Tom said, what are you going to do for the artists? Like, I don't think it's like they're like, oh, I can't think of any band that would be like, oh, well, this is going to go up on Pitchfork, or like, but I think that if you come across as a fan who's going to do an interview, who's going to help promote the show, give away tickets, give away CDs, like, do whatever you can to make sure their experience in your town or your area is going to be beneficial to them, whether they walk away with just you as a lifelong fan or like a few more people at the station or maybe even some people in the community.
More questions? Yes.
Can I just make a comment on that?
Questions. Follow directions. No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. Yes, you can say. I'm sorry.
They're doing really cool things. That's amazing. Like, why aren't we doing that? I bet you're going to do great after that. Like, you can set stuff up for yourself. If you take advantage of the fact that it's dying to really try some new things and get innovative, then you can make the college radio revival, I guess.
Also, you guys are at CMJ with a million other kindred spirits and music directors, so you should take time to, like, hang out with each other, talk to each other. Like, that's why forums like Medium Rotation exist, so you guys have, like, a sounding board and a community to share ideas and kind of keep college radio going. So it's kind of on you guys to to make the effort to connect with each other, and not even just like people who work in labels or promoters or whoever, but the people that are doing it like right now to make it something. And obviously there's enough people out there that care, otherwise you wouldn't be here at CMJ. So it's about finding those people and sharing those ideas and creating a network. You know, like stations in markets could be like, hey, we all love this one band. Let's all try to do stuff for this one band while they're rolling through town. Like, let's be like a mini street team or whatever. Like, you guys are here. You might as well brainstorm and do something about it.
Cool. Well, that's all the time, unfortunately. Thank you for coming. If, this has all been recorded, so if you guys want to listen back, it'll be on the Washed Up Emo podcast. Follow us all. Hang out. And thanks, guys, for coming.
There's also, if the panelists are up for
it,
we have a breakout room at 9.
Oh, shit. Breakdown room.
Pick up change! 9:00.